Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of series 5 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. AI or artificial intelligence is something that we've talked about on the show a number of times in recent months. We had an interview in episode 8 of this series where we spoke with Tarek Kamil from Circle, where we were looking at how AI can be used to better serve content to our employees within our organizations. And last year when I was at the Unite 23 conference, there was a big emphasis on AI there, and we covered that in a special episode last season, if you want to go back and have a listen to that. So we're going to revisit AI again today, but this time we're going to be looking at it more from a personal productivity level and how we can make our work more effective and more efficient by using AI tools. I think there is a plethora of tools that we're aware of, ChatGPT, etc., that we're aware of and some of us may be using, but I guess there's also a sense that what else is out there and how can I use it? So our speaker today is going to be sharing with us some ideas, some quick personal productivity hacks that we can use in our work, but also then how we can scale that up in our organizations and actually create more effective communications and engagement for our employees. We're also going to look at some of the risks and dangers of AI, particularly from a data management, and also looking at some of the new legislative frameworks that are coming out to help us to better manage AI and to reduce some of those risks as well. And as I said, it will also be looking at some tools and techniques that we'll be sharing with you both in the episode itself, but also in the show notes with this episode on how you can effectively start to use AI safely in your work and to get the benefits from it without the risks and limitations. So hope you find this a really interesting and useful conversation. My guest today is Fiona Passantino. Fiona is a speaker, blogger, coach, podcast host, and author and illustrator of the award-winning 2023 UK book Comic Books for Executives series, which includes titles like Communication and Engagement. Fiona is the host of the podcast Working Humans. Her book, AI Powered, is a simple guide for non-technical professionals in this new world and is coming out soon. Before becoming an independent consultant, Fiona was embedded in corporate communications for 15 years, working with some of the largest international companies in Europe. She received an MBA in management from the University of Amsterdam with a concentration in AI and has been writing and speaking about AI ever since. So hello, Fiona, how are you?
Hi, Craig. Well, thank you so much for welcoming me so beautifully.
Oh, that's a pleasure. And I believe you're on your travels at the moment. You're normally, where are you? You're based in the Netherlands, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, normally in The Hague, and I'm passing through the United States for about a week. I tend to come back and forth a fair amount.
Fantastic. Which part of the States are you in at the moment?
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Well, actually, Ackworth, Georgia, which is about an hour and a half north
of Atlanta. But that's the nearest mm-hmm. city that people will be probably familiar with who aren't from the States, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. So I gave an introduction there, which is a really fantastic array of experience and skills that you've got there. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you're doing now? Because obviously you're very focused on AI. What are you doing at the moment? And also probably what led you to AI? Because I guess many people think it's a recent phenomenon. I guess it's been around for a lot longer than we think. But how long have you been immersed in AI, and why did you choose that path?
Yeah, you're right about it being around for a while. I mean, AI has been with us since Eliza in the 1960s was our first kind of chatbot that was able to gauge our human sentiment mm-hmm. and regurgitate a response that made it feel like a conversation. And mm-hmm. ever since, it has been in a cycle of AI winters and AI summers and spring. And we are definitely right now in a spring time mm-hmm. of AI. It's really just exploded due to the changing data availability landscape that allows it to become so much smarter so quickly. My background is actually in the human, very much the human engagement, human internal communication, HR. I spent many, many years as a workplace community engagement officer and internal comms person. I'm very passionate about communication and presenting and storytelling.
Yeah.
And then when I got my master's, they offered a concentration in various things. And I thought, well, you know, the one I really want, digital marketing, is full. So I guess this AI thing could be useful someday. And I just thought it was kind of this niche thing that was kind of an interesting little sidebar. But then I started taking my first classes in it, and it just sparked this passion. It was fascinating. We're actually building a brain that is mimicking our own in almost every way, except one is biological, the other one is essentially digital. And watching this explode over the last, I would say, year and 3 months has been truly exciting, because during that education, I really got to know how the AI brain works and where it's coming from, where it's going. And that paired with what's happening in robotics at the moment is, I think we're on our way to a very different future for our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you're obviously writing, you're producing a lot of content around that. You're delivering training as well, I believe. Is that correct?
That's right. So now I'm basically a full-time AI trainer, facilitator, and coach. I give keynotes for companies. I help companies make that transition from digital to AI-powered. And my specialty is working with the non-technical community. So I don't really speak to data engineers. I don't speak to IT people necessarily, but the people who are at the sort of in the space that has the least access to this kind of knowledge. So C-leadership, administration, HR, communication, sales, marketing, these kinds of professionals who are still very much in the digital analog world. And they are essentially kind of dipping their toe into this now and are trying to make this conversion over. And I really love explaining these very complex topics in ways that we non-technicals can understand. I'm very much a non-technical myself, even though I'm quite passionate about what these things can do and what they are and how they work, and explain them in a way that doesn't use jargon, that is simple and easy. And that's where the comic books come in. I feel like the comic is such a powerful vehicle for explaining not only complex and difficult technical information, but making it fun and engaging and funny. So that is the first step towards empowerment. If you're laughing at something or laughing with something, first of all, it's not as scary. And second of all, you're reducing the elements to such an extent that it comes in easier into our long-term memories, and we can access it better when we attach a bit of emotion to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely at one with you there. That's very, very, very much part of our work around using visualization and metaphor and stories to kind of really make things that are difficult to access accessible for intelligent people who can work out other things, but some things are difficult to get your head around, aren't they? And I guess AI is one of those classic things if you're not, as you say, if you're non-technical. So that's great.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Sure.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that's really,
and there are a lot of consequences for not understanding this. I think we're finding our frustration is that this whole thing is being driven by what I call the Bitcoin bros, you know, the kind of Silicon Valley group that is sort of driving forward into an AGI future, artificial general intelligence, just about as fast as we can go. And we're kind of just left on the sidelines blinking, wondering, A, is this a good idea?
Yeah.
And B, you know, what do we do about it? And we non-technicals have to be part of this conversation. We have to understand it enough so that we can help drive policy, not only for our own companies and for ourselves, but for our own societies, and try to take back a little bit of control away from these developments, because clearly our lawmakers are not able to legislate in time for these developments.
Yeah, I agree. They're legislating for things they don't understand themselves, and that's kind of probably one of the scariest thing about it. And who is actually in control of all of this, which is exciting from an innovation perspective, but scary from a kind of what we're capable of if these things end up in the wrong hands, I guess. So yeah. Okay, so that's really interesting, Fiona. So I get the feeling then that a lot of what you do is around kind of personal productivity and effectiveness, but also, you know, scaling that up into kind of how we do that within a, you know, at scale within an organization as well, which is obviously a combination of all of those individual adaptations, I guess. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So you're obviously empathetic to the audience for this show, which is a kind of internal comms and employee engagement and, you know, kind of HROD space. What are some of the ways that you're seeing AI being relevant to that space now, and also maybe opportunities that it's not embracing at the moment? So what are some of the kind of maybe hacks that you can offer for our listeners that maybe they're not aware of at the moment, well, either at scale or on a kind of personal effectiveness and productivity level?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite hacks, if you're looking for just a quick hack, is, well, just to back up, the for me, the most powerful application of AI for the communication group is hyper personalization. So you're getting communications in that are really tailored to the recipient and not generalized. So it's very, very interesting to us. And this includes language and culture. So one of the kind of hacks that I like to talk about is creating podcasts for, like, leadership podcasts for employees out in the field, for deskless workers, for people embedded in retail or people on the supply chain that don't sit behind a computer. These are very difficult employees to reach. And C-suite management has a very hard time talking to this group of employees. I think they have some of the lowest engagement levels, I think 22% right now among all workers. And I think almost a quarter of them feels very left out of HQ communication. Whereas if you contrast that with people working in headquarters at office jobs, it's just the opposite. You're absolutely inundated and flooded with so much information, more than you can possibly read. So you're very well informed by overdoing it. But then out in the field, it's really quite the opposite. And the podcast that is, let's say, once a week from the CEO themselves in their own voice, in the language of the local person. This is a really powerful tool for engagement and practically for information. And these are all AI-supported possibilities. So if you clone your voice with a tool such as 11 Labs, you are able to just write out a very brief one-paragraph roundup of the news, record the CEO's voice, and then broadcast this translated into any language that you can imagine that in the field. And of course, you have to have the disclaimer that you don't actually speak these languages, but once you're past that sort of, you know, fine print, let's say, then the emotional impact of having your CEO come to meet you where you are in your language is very, very powerful.
It's
also quite dangerous for this. The CEO definitely has to trust their internal comms people, because once they have access to the voice, then that's, you know,
deep fake.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And people do know it's a deep fake. You can hear it. You can hear it. The AI voice is a robotic, has a kind of robotic sound to it, and it kind of buffers, it speeds and slows according to its, you know, its tokenization. But it does make that impression from one human to another that you're sending the signal that you're on their level and you're listening and communicating in their playing space, let's say. And I think that just sends a powerful message.
That sounds like a really quick hack. So we'll maybe put a link into that into the show notes. If we finish recording, you could send me the URL. And we talked about that actually in a recent episode, which we talked to Tarek Kamil from a company called Circle. I don't know if you've come across Circle before, Fiona, that they do kind of personalization of all, you know, kind of written media as well for companies as well. It's an app, but or a cloud-based.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many. I mean, internal comms people, I wish I had some of these tools when I was practicing. One of my favorites is probably very similar is StaffBase. And that's like a layer that is laid on top of the 365 environment that really keeps everything, you know, on a row. This is mostly written communication, although they have included SMS communication as part of that. And it's just this radical regionalization when you have large, complex organizations, people you have to inform and engage and inspire. And it's multi-platform. And I can definitely provide a link for that as well.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. And then we've had StaffBase on the show before as well. So it's interesting how all of these topics are converging, but from slightly different angles. I think we talked to StaffBase around, the kind of deskless environment as well. And how that works as well. So again, it's that sort of confluence. So I guess we dive straight into the kind of tactical end of the conversation there around that. You know, how is AI? I mean, what looking sort of dialing back and zooming back out a little bit. I mean, strategically, what are some of the things that we need to be thinking of, maybe in our organizations when it comes to AI? I mean, obviously, you talked about some strategic issues there around like deskless workers and kind of, you know, kind of personalization as well, which I think are hugely important. What are the threats, opportunities do you think AI is presenting to the community? Because I know there's been a lot of talk around, well, a lot of jobs, but particularly content generators becoming kind of obsolete because, you know, you can delegate stuff to AI to write for you. You write your blogs, your articles, your newsletters, all that sort of thing, which has obviously been a core skill that a lot of internal communicators have prized over the years. What opportunities to contrast to that, and also maybe other risks that we need to be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of questions in there.
Break those down a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I do focus on integration strategy. So this is helping leaders break out a roadmap. And AI integration does follow a similar pattern. Obviously, every organization is different and the maturity level is different for every organization. But it does follow a similar pattern. And it's a repeating cycle of very in-depth training. So we basically go layer by layer in the organization and train people up to understand what it is, how it works, what the risks are just within the organization in terms of, you know, data safety.
Yeah.
And then go through, okay, now how do you put it into your teams? And I do these exercises called task mapping, where people will, within one team or another, will just pull apart every single task that they do. Because having a job, like let's say you're an HRBP, or let's say you're an internal comms practitioner, your job is a collection of tasks that you perform throughout your day. And these vary from one organization to another. And if you pull apart every single task that is describes your job title, you can really see, okay, this thing can be an AI human co-production in this way with this tool. And this thing that I do, event planning, let's say, or engagement strategy building, can be an AI human powered task in this way and using this tool. And in so doing, you create what's called your stack. And your stack is your collection of AI tools that allow you to do what you do. So it's building your stack. It's understanding how to use it. It's allowing time to practice. And then leadership needs to first understand, what is my basic level of maturity within the organization as a, you know, AI? Am I an ostrich, which with my head in the sand, not seeing it, you know, hoping it all goes away? Am I more of an eagle looking out into the future, scanning the horizons for new developments and bringing them back into the organization? Or am I somewhere in between? Usually people are somewhere in between. And it's, by the way, perfectly fine to be at the beginning of this process. Most organizations are at the very beginning of this process. And, you know, there's no finish line, by the way, because it's a cyclical repeating process. You can compare it to the transition to the agile way of working, but it's more intense even than that, because agile is this large big bang, kind of all hands on deck. We're going to learn this stuff. We're going to be trained. We're going to transfer over into this new way of working. And then you have very intensive training and breakouts and practice areas and structure and restructuring. And then you have kind of agile coaches that help for then another year or so. And I think it's the same with AI. You start with big training, big integration sessions, really working workshop sessions where people understand it. And then you kind of recede as an external expert. You kind of recede into the background and become an AI coach. You know, so you come like maybe once a month and you answer whatever AI related questions you have. Except the difference with this and Agile is kind of one and done. So it's this big thing you go through and then you're, you know, digitized and so on. But with AI integration, it's kind of a repeat wash cycle. So you have to do the same thing again next year because the thing is shifting so quickly. And the tools we have today are not going to be the same tools as we are going to be using tomorrow or even, you know, next week. So we have to have this entire mindset of we need to create space for continuous training and education. And for leadership, this is really, really hard because it's quite expensive in terms of time and money.
Yeah. I was thinking that actually, because you'd hit the nail on the head, which for me is, it was a question I was going to ask you actually, which is, I guess the obsolescence rate is almost becoming exponential in terms of, you know, the kind of new tools that are coming out that are rendering the ones that were kind of the new thing a year ago or even less than that. So I guess part of that training and learning that we need to do is all or never to become kind of wedded to one particular tool because it may be superseded by something that's far more powerful. So I guess that's part of the learning, which I guess makes it even a little more bit more edgy than just you know, like you say, just learning how to use a new thing that you're going to be using for the next 5 years. It's much more volatile than that, isn't it?
Yeah, and the expectations that you can just learn it and do it. I mean, I understand why it's so important to have these external experts because it's a full-time job just keeping up with developments and understanding them and creating curriculum around them. It's not realistic to expect your team to take 2 days off a week every week to keep on top of all of this and learn it and keep the lights on. And these people are working full-time and not most of the time we're quite overwhelmed. We're working 10-hour days and we're getting constant pings and emails and social media, et cetera. So, assuming that people will have and make the time to do this on their own it's a big ask. So I see this all the time that you know, leaders are sort of saying to people, well, you know, just learn it and come back to me. But, you know, that to what end? I mean, the vision has to come first. Why are we becoming AI powered? What problem is this trying to solve? Or are we just doing it because our competition is doing it, right?
Yeah. So I know on a personal productivity level, one of the things you've mentioned in our kind of notes that we put together is that there's an opportunity here to increase joy and inspiration at work, which is something that I guess is you know, you mentioned that it's in short supply these days. I wouldn't argue with you about that. So is that a case that we can look to AI as something that we can delegate more menial tasks to, so we can kind of focus on the bits that really need our kind of human brain to work on? Is that fair to say, or is that a simplification?
No, that's absolutely right. And part of our joy at work is being able to leverage our humanity. During these task mapping exercises, I tend to tell people to draw, you know, take a piece of paper and draw a big line down the middle. And on one end, on one side, you say, these are the things I love to do. So this is the part of my job that I love to do. And if I could do these things every single day, every day of the week, I'll be the happiest person on earth. That's a whole list. And you fill that out. Then you have the opposite side, the dark side. So what are the things that just drive me crazy? I hate doing these things. And if I could never have to do these things ever again in my life, I'll be the happiest person on earth. And then you list those things out. And time again, there are patterns that form. And the things that people really love to do that really drive them in their jobs are connection with people, being with teams, brainstorming, solving complex problems that require your special expertise and your human communication skills, being with others, being in learning events, leading and supporting teams and people, and talking with clients, listening to clients, understanding their needs, and creating customized projects for them, products for them. And these are very human things. No AI on earth can do those things.
Yeah.
And these are the things we like to do best. What tends to fall on the other side of that list? Bookkeeping, reading long 32-page reports and creating bullet points out of them, writing long responses to emails, creating social media posts based on a PowerPoint, or creating a storyboard for a company video based on some long email by a CEO, creating a thought leadership article based on some PowerPoint that a CEO made. He's kind of like modal shifting. So these are the tasks that, or going through data, going through massive amounts of data and trying to gain intelligence out of them, creating personas, like onboarding personas. These are time consuming, very technical pieces of work that require a great deal of brain work, but the output is not that high level. And these are exactly the kinds of things that AI can do for us. Of course, nobody uses out of the can AI, or nobody should use it, which is anything that gets spit back out at the prompt window at the other end is just used word for word in our work. That's like eating pasta sauce out of a jar. No, nobody does that. You know, it's a raw material for the work that you actually finally create. And a lot of times AI is a wonderful tool for brainstorming. Do I have enough ideas in this session? Am I missing something? What are five catchy titles for the next event that we're creating?
Yeah.
What is, the structure for a great article about, a new supply chain initiative? So using it at the front end, the middle section, and the back end can help you really use your human skills, which is creating that emotive, connection with your readers or your listeners, and letting AI doing the kind of dumb work for you.
Yeah, excellent. I'm going to combine a couple of the next two questions together just to kind of cover them off. I may be making a mistake in combining them together, but maybe I think there is a connection. So I guess we've talked very much about the opportunities, and we leaned in a little bit at the beginning about some of the watch outs and risks, particularly when it comes to regulation or under regulation. But also if we maybe combine that with a question around some recent EU legislation, which is the EU AI Act, which I know you kind of have an opinion on, and you have some thoughts around. So maybe if we can talk about the threats and risks, but then also the regulatory element as well, Fiona, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, sure. Well, the biggest risk, I think, for organizations is data security, because anything that you put into that prompt window, it gets sucked off and tokenized, which is kind of broken apart in those little component Lego bricks that make up our human language, and put into a kind of pool from which these models will take the value and recombine it using your Legos and other Lego bricks within its training pool and spit it back out. Now, that means that the data that you put into that prompt window leaves your possession. It goes in through the pipes and into a giant warehouse in, outside Silicon Valley somewhere, and will be, by necessity, training data for itself, for this one query, as well as for the larger pool. So just as an example, in 2023, a group of researchers were trying to study whether repetition improves performance in AI models. We all know that this happens with humans. So if we repeat things over and over again, it improves our learning and our own performance. And so they just took one word, in this case, poem, randomly, and they inserted it thousands and thousands of times into a GPT prompt window. And they let it run overnight. And somewhere along the line, after about 24 hours of this, the model broke and it began coughing up what looked like random text at first. And then after that, it kind of started coughing up original training material, which included text of articles CEO emails to staff, very, very sensitive kind of information. And this was a complete accidental discussion. It turned out to be repeatable. So other developers jumped in and they tried it for themselves. And sure enough, they could kind of break the model too. And, you know, OpenAI, of course, had to make that very uncomfortable 3 a.m. phone call to patch the thing and switch it off. And I mean, that one thing was solved, but, you know, no data is 100% safe anywhere. And especially when you have these big players like the OpenAIs, like X, like, you know, Meta, everybody wants to hack these places. These are just nirvana for hackers. That makes this data at higher risk than if you're a widget factory and you have your data in some cloud service. Nobody cares. And I mean, no offense to widgets, but nobody cares enough to be for it to be a target for aggressive hacking. So anything that you put into a prompt, but before we all have the capability to go to a system like Hugging Face, downloading a foundational pre-trained model and building one, fine-tuning it within our own organization, placing it behind our firewall next to our own data landscape, before we have that capability, which not everybody has, we are going to be using off-the-shelf solutions. And while we're doing so, we don't anything into that prompt window that we're not fully comfortable splashing all over the websites of every other user out there, you know, if something goes wrong, or even if something doesn't go wrong. We have in the fine print that you refer to so nicely in the beginning that nobody reads, most of these large language models do allow themselves quite a lot of wiggle room when it comes to your data and what it's used for. And it gives itself a lot of freedom to use the data for future development, for things that don't even exist yet, but they know that they're out there. So just as a precaution, when you build your governance within your organization, how do you use these tools? It's very, very important that the things that are going into those prompt windows are safe.
Mm. I think that's a really important watch out, because I guess a lot of people aren't aware of that. I mean, we probably would have worked it out, but we have come a bit flippant, I think, even in an age of data security where we kind of just think, well, nobody's interested in that. But
They will be when their stuff comes spitting out. And then your second part of your question, what are we doing about it with regulation?
Yes.
Well, the EU on March 13 signed into law the EU AI Act, which is kind of this first, you know, flag in the sand that says, okay, we're going to start regulating this stuff because it affects everybody. And so they put together a couple of guidelines. They first divided AI into several categories. So banned AI, outright ban on certain AI, which includes scoring systems carried out by private organizations, real-time biometric identifications, untargeted scraping. So what this means in practical terms is it's banned practice is for you to be collecting data, personal information and data used for any of these AI purposes. So an example of this as a private organization is a self-driving car that is recording and gathering your driving behavior, even if you've never had an accident, and feeding it into an algorithm that ranks you as a safe driver or an unsafe driver, even if you've never had an accident before. And based on this is raising your monthly premiums against somebody who has quote unquote safe driving practices. And this is done without your knowing. So you're being kind of surveilled and data on you is being collected, and it affects your driving rates, your insurance rates. So this is banned now, this kind of practice.
That's been used for a while. Certainly in the UK, they have like black boxes, which you can elect to use, which if you're a young driver, it kind of, you know, you have a curfew when you can't drive at night and certain speeds, and obviously that you it will nullify your insurance. So that sort of thing will be banned, or is it more kind of covert.
What you're describing is, I assume that it's something that you actually sign up for, right?
Right. So it's involuntary and right. monitoring.
As long as you are informed and you're aware and you're doing it, that in you can switch it on and off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then that's different. I'm talking about that you're not aware that it's happening under the radar. That this kind of behavior tracking and emotional inference, for instance, if you're engaged at school or something, and you're tracking emotional inference. Well, this is heavily culturally biased, and therefore not legal. Anymore.
Understood. Yeah. Yeah.
Then the second category down is a high-risk AI. So this is AI that's used in very critical tasks like transportation, education, law enforcement. Think of like air traffic control, AI helping to land airplanes. We want that to work, all of us. And so these kinds of applications are embedded into our basic infrastructure, whether it's physical infrastructure, digital infrastructure, information infrastructure. And these have to go through a pretty strict regulatory framework, sort of like applying for a patent, where you get a seal at the end of it. So it'll be that kind of requirement. And they are judged on things like transparency, accountability, data quality for bias, and how they communicate all of this to their end user. Then the category of limited risk AI don't bear intrinsic risk, but they can potentially influence or mislead the typical human user. So imagine that you're having a conversation with a chatbot and you think you're talking to a human the whole time. Well, from now on, you're going to have to clearly indicate you're talking to a chatbot. You're not talking to a human. And that moment when you switch over to a human agent, it's very clear to the user. That kind of thing is limited risk AI. And then finally, minimal risk AI is most of general purpose AI falls under this category. So these are our generative workplace tools that we're using all the time.
Okay. So that's really interesting. And I guess whilst UK isn't part of the EU, a lot of our listeners are in the UK. I guess that we will, I'm sure, follow or mirror that in some way, shape or form, hopefully anyway. And obviously in the States, then they'll have their own legislative framework. But certainly for our EU listeners, that's highly relevant and something that to be aware of. I'm sure organizations
are doing.
Well,
it's already having an effect, actually, because the EU is such a large market and it's really very boldly planting a flag. It's making everybody kind of unhappy, which means that it's sort of fair. But when they did so, they put forth a series of human user rights. So humans have the right to complain if they feel like decisions were made by an algorithm that affect them, like not getting the job that they feel that they should have gotten, or that they have the right to actually audit the company and see where that decision came from. You also have the right to know what you're watching. So that cat video that you're viewing on YouTube, you have the right to know if this is a deep fake or a real cat. So fake content will need clear labels, at least when you're using a European IP, which is, it's almost impossible to decide this. And you have the right to know who you're talking to. Are you talking to a human or a bot? So these, if we just remember those three things that every European user has the right to, then we know what we can and can't be building and using. Yeah. And the funny thing happened was right the same week that this law came out, global YouTube issued a voluntary little checkbox for all uploaded content, suggesting that this is either human or real content or AI generated content. And this shows that once one market plants a flag and says this is how we're going to work, that others follow. And some will be voluntary, some will be mandatory. The US also has some, fairly robust regulations around AI, but not so much a user bill of rights in this way. This goes further. And of course, each individual company wants to create tools that meet the needs of every single market, rather than having versions running around.
So they want to have one ubiquitous tool.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, just bringing things to thank you, Fiona. That's fascinating. So just bringing things to a conclusion then, and we've already covered a few of these, I think, already. You talked about it earlier when we talked about hacks, and you also mentioned some tools like StaffBase. I mean, just finally, just you know, for the listener who's listening to this and thinking about AI and how I can kind of embrace all of these things amongst all the other things that I've got going on at work at the moment, what would be some final tips and recommendations from you to kind of really make the most of this opportunity, but also kind of be aware of some of the risks that we've talked about as well?
Yeah, I think when it comes to these sort of big information days, that these kinds of all hands events, like we're going to, you know, learn about AI together as a company, and we're going to do it in you know, a keynote / workshop lineup, is to make it fun and have a, you know, make it festive, a festive occasion where people come together and we're all learning about this new thing together, and we're going to take a moment to celebrate each other and our future, and, you know, try to make it as light and fun as possible, which means for all you internal comms people out there, you know, if you bring the food, the people will come. So, you know, bring, you know, cater it, have a nice event, have a party, have, you know, a little reception afterwards or something, just to really make it a celebratory event. Because I think in our day-to-day work and our overwhelm with all of our, you know, tasks that we have to do, I really think it's important to take a moment to step back and say, what does this mean? Where are we in our species evolutionary process? I mean, this is an immensely exciting moment to preside over. We've been trying to build machines that think since, you know, the beginning of our written history. You know, in mythology, we have so many different practices that talk about building robots and building, you know, thinking machines. And here we are, you know, thousands of years later, we're just about to crack this. And I think it's quite scary, of course. We don't know what this will lead to. Nobody does, including the people who are building it furiously. But just this kind of the wonder of being at this moment in time is something that is nice to just reflect on.
Yeah, I think that's a really optimistic and realistically optimistic way of thinking about it. So yeah, fantastic. So no, that's really been really helpful, Fiona. So I guess our listeners are going to be thinking, well, that's great, and there's so much more we could have covered there. How do we encourage them to get in touch with you? We're going to put a link into your show notes and your podcast, Working Humans, which is available on Apple and Spotify, I believe. And you have a post-COVID handbook. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Fiona? Just so put a link into that. Yeah.
Yeah. I can include my LinkedIn as well and my own website, workinghumans.com. And yeah, people can certainly reach out and hear more. There's so much vastness in this topic that we're barely, as you suggest, there's barely scratching the surface. Those two books that you refer to, those are the first two books in the Comic Books for Executives series. And it's a light read. It's quick. It's easy. It sort of tells the story of COVID in a comic book form that explains how we got to this place that we are now, all the things that happened that changed our working lives forever and how we communicate and made us truly digital communicators. And then the first book is about communication and how to be a really effective communicator in 6 easy steps. And the second is employee engagement and how to inspire and connect and inform a workplace community, same structure, 6 easy steps and comic book format. And then the one that's coming in the future is going to be all about leadership. And then, of course, AI Powered is the book that's coming out this year. And we're just, publishing is a slow process, but the book is ready. It's out there. The blog, it contains a lot of excerpts from the book. So if you're diligent enough to read through some of those articles, then the content is largely there.
Yeah. Excellent. And the book is going to be available on Amazon. Is that, or is it going to be?
Books now are all available on Amazon.
Great.
And I believe Goodreads and Barnes & Noble as well.
Okay.
And the future books, when they come out, will all be similarly. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, well done on being so prolific as well with your writing. So it's a major achievement. So
thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So look, that's been fantastic. Really, really, really useful insight, and kind of building on this theme of, you know, recurring theme, not surprisingly, of AI that we've covered from a number of different angles now, but a very, very, I like the way that you cover it very much from a kind of personal productivity and really leveraging it on an individual level, but then scaling that up, but also, you know, from a very pragmatic perspective as well. So I think that will resonate with a lot of our listeners who tend to be very pragmatic and looking for ways to be more effective and more efficient. So that's really, really relevant. So, thank you so much, Fiona. Enjoy your rest of the time in Georgia, and have a safe trip back to Europe, to the Netherlands. And thank you so much for your time and your generosity in sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us.
Thank you so much, Craig. I really had a pleasure.
Thank you.
Really great.
Thank you. Take care, Fiona. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye now.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.